on this Wednesday, June the 30th, 2021, last day of the month of June, 16, coming up on 17 minutes past the hour, having an interesting conversation here about should things that are nearly 90 years old now still be aired on accessible free radio and television. And a lot of this is happening in television right now because we're now getting to a point where television's old and those shows from the 40s, 50s, and 60s are airing on all these free stations over the air, and that's all they're airing is these old sitcoms and old westerns and old whatevers. And should things of that era still be aired if they have a bad connotation? And the one we're talking about is Amos and Andy from radio. Now, honestly, I can't place a television show from the beginning of television, maybe it's because it came late, the 50s, that had a bad connotation. What television show couldn't you air today that you aired when it was on?
Well, one that always surprises me that is when they air old episodes of The Lone Ranger, and Tonto is depicted as a pretty ignorant, well, not so ignorant, but not so bright Native American.
Well, see, I don't know, because to me, I guess in this particular case, I don't know any television show that doesn't have a dumb and or naive character.
Yeah, but to make them non-white, it is kind of hitting you on the head with a hammer.
Well, maybe. I don't know. That one would be...
I mean, it didn't offend me terribly, but that's... I was struggling to think of an example of what you're asking about.
I just think television is not an accurate depiction of the times it's in, but it also, I don't think television ever got overtly anything. I don't think television was ever, I mean, here's one of the reasons why. The first big hit sitcom is I Love Lucy. And when your star is a female, and you're the number one show for 6 years the entire time you're on,
And her husband was not an American,
it's hard to depict women as subservient, because
she was not,
and it's hard to depict. It's hard to do anything racist and or what would you say? It's not racism. It's
I'm trying to help you.
What is the word? I mean, if you were going to depict a Cuban in a bad way, what would you call that?
Wow. I don't know.
But you television couldn't do that because the first two gigantic stars on television were a woman and a Cuban.
Now, did you ever interview Desi Arnaz?
No, never did.
I wonder if he really spoke the way they have him on...
I've heard him interviewed.
So he really did speak that way.
That's how he spoke.
If he was playing that up, that would have been a problem. But if that's
now, Lucy's
really
hair wasn't red.
Yeah, I know that. And she was beautiful when she was very young.
Yeah. I think that is what happened to television, is when your hit is about a woman, it's then hard to go and depict women any other way.
We seem to find ways to do it throughout our history, though. I don't know.
I can't think of a television show, even if the woman is in an apron in the kitchen, where she's depicted in a bad way. You know, Barbara Billingsley became a huge star.
Uh-huh.
And Donna Reed. Yeah,
none of them were depicted badly.
No.
They were
fine.
They were loving mothers. That was the way you
were
supposed to
be. And their husbands loved them.
Absolutely. And the kids loved them, and they always said something very smart to their
kids. And a lot of times they had to figure it out, you know, in the episodes where Dad couldn't figure it out.
My wife watches Leave It to Beaver almost every morning, and it's kind of interesting that she would do that. We must have a winner walking.
Not a winner, a visitor. But,
oh, that's a wiener, not a winner.
But, you know, it is. I don't think television, if somebody knows one, let me know. But I can't think of one where a woman was depicted badly.
Yeah, I can't either.
I mean, even
I'm sure there is.
You know, one show that's been forgotten that I'm starting to see replayed, Hazel.
Yeah,
that was a big show.
I did not like that.
But show. she was the star.
Yeah, and she was a bright lady who really gave words of wisdom to the younger and the others.
Well, and look at the Dick Van Dyke. I mean, you had Rose Marie and Mary Tyler Moore.
Yeah.
They weren't depicted bad.
No, that was a really good... I really enjoyed that.
Andy Griffith had Aunt Bee.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a bad depiction.
You know, it's kind of interesting. I always thought that Aunt Bee was not liked by Aunt...
she wasn't.
But he didn't hate her like it's gotten to the point.
Go ahead, caller. Oh, well... If you want to give us a buzz back, 740-383-9944, that's 740-383-9944.
Now,
no, but there was a rift.
Yeah, there was, but I don't think it was nearly as big as what we've been told a long time ago. Back when I was watching it, I was heartbroken that Andy didn't like...
well, it's my understanding that she didn't like him.
Yes, that's what I've heard. But and I've heard him talk about it, that it wasn't bad. It was just they weren't friends.
No, yeah. That she didn't...
she was a very legitimate actress.
Well, that was one of the problems,
yeah.
Is that she could never play anything else after that.
Right.
And another problem was he was the star.
Yep.
And I don't think she was an older lady. I don't think she liked deferring to him. And but you know, there is a story that I can't, it was either I read or I heard Andy Griffith tell, that they didn't get along. As a matter of fact, I think he said he went to see her one time. She lived in North Carolina, and she wouldn't let him in the house.
Huh.
That was how bad it was.
I have not heard that.
But I guess when she was dying, a lot of people, this is an interesting story, because people love that show.
Yeah, I did. I still do. Still watch it.
Well, when the reunion in Mayberry, which brought it a whole new life in the 80s, they depict as Aunt Bee as being dead. And most people were like, gosh, she wasn't dead. she was very old. She was in her late 80s, but she was not dead. She was actually still alive. She didn't want to do the movie, and I'm sure her health was not particularly good.
It wasn't a great movie either.
No, but the funny thing, the story I want to get to is, and I think I heard Andy tell this, was that when she was dying, she had cancer, about 90, somebody on the show who was close with her said, Francis wants to talk to you. And he called her, and she said, you know, I'm dying. And he said, can I do it? He said, no, there's nothing you can do for me. But I just wanted to tell you, I'm sorry we didn't get along better. And it was my fault. It was your show. And they had that conversation.
We should all have those coming to Jesus moments.
When she
said.
Just about was coming to
yeah,
Jesus at that
right.
point. Go ahead, caller. Are you there, caller?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, you were talking about Western and stuff. Wait a minute, you're reading about one great star, that was Barbara Stanwyck.
What was that?
She was pioneer in the Westerns.
Barbara Stanwyck?
One of women stars.
Yeah,
Barbara
she was
Stanwyck.
Yep. That's right. Well, thank you. Again, phone lines are open, 740-383-9944.
As much as I don't really like John Wayne movies, I love the women that he had in the John Wayne movies. They were always very strong women, quite often from Europe rather than the United States. And I loved the women characters.
Well, here's what. Maybe let's see if the audience will get this. All those Road movies that Bing Crosby and Bob Hope did,
sure.
Everybody always leaves out the woman who was in all those movies with them. Do you remember who it was?
No, I don't.
There's a woman in, I think,
Barbara
all...
Barbara Stanwyck.
Not Barbara Stanwyck. But is she... And she's a forgotten actress now. But
really?
If you go to all... It was three. It was Bing and Bob. And this woman in... It was either all or most all of those Road movies.
I always thought those were different women. And you say
no,
it's the same
it's
woman.
No, it's the same woman.
Oh, my.
Does anybody know the woman who was in all the Road pictures with Bing and Bob? And Bob worked with her in other things. I don't think Bing did many other pictures, but Bob did, and she would come on the specials from time to time. She lived a long time. 740-383-9944. Who is the woman who's in all those Road pictures with Bing and Bob? And I don't know why she gets left off.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of a shame. It's probably the times. Could well, the other two were very big names.
But she had a good part in the movies.
Yeah, I didn't remember it was the same lady, but yeah. I do remember it was a good part.
She was a standout.
Always kind of a foil to
yeah,
the other
yeah.
two.
Yeah, but she was smarter than them.
Oh, always.
You know,
yeah.
where they were trying to go, and there'd she was smarter.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So does anybody remember who that was?
You know, Bob, our caller that just called in, I was thinking about it. Bob sounds a lot like Shecky Green sounded this morning.
Go ahead, caller.
I think her last name was De Havilland. I can't remember the
name. Or Barbara De Havilland.
Olivia De Havilland.
Olivia De Havilland.
No, I don't think it was Olivia, but it was De Havilland, though.
Huh.
But I think Olivia was the one, the sister that was in Gone with the Wind.
Right. It, oh, yeah, that's right.
But it was not a De Havilland.
Was
but
it Gloria De Havilland?
No, not Gloria De Havilland, but a good guess.
Okay.
Thank you. No, it was not a De Havilland. Are you looking it up?
Yeah.
Don't look it up. It'll be a surprise when you hear it. 740-383-9944.
I was looking up Gloria De Havilland.
Well, yeah, she was the sister of Olivia De Havilland.
Yeah, I wanted to see what she looked like. I recognize her.
But who is the woman who's in all the road pictures, most of them, with being in... maybe there was one she didn't do. But she's in all of them.
Boy, Gloria De Havilland is really pretty.
Oh, now you got your eyes on Gloria De Havilland.
What nice cheekbones she had. Okay. Yeah, you know, I wish we had been on the air during our break because we had some really good discussions during our break as well.
The discussion we had during the break coming off the Amos and Andy conversation was how when I was in college, I took a sociology class, and we had to read a book called The Way Things Never Were. And the 50s television... Leave It to Beaver and Father Knows Best and Make Room for Daddy. People think that's what life was, and that's what this, you know, longing for now is. This time where Mom wore the apron and Dad wore a suit and nobody locked their doors, but that really wasn't what the time was like when these shows were airing, but people think it was because that's what is there. Go ahead, caller.
Dorothy L'Amour.
Dorothy L'Amour.
Oh, that's right. I now remember the name.
Do you remember Dorothy L'Amour?
Caller?
She left us. Well, does anybody... It was Dorothy L'Amour. She was in almost all of those films.
I'm going to have to look her up because I don't really remember what she looked like.
Dorothy L'Amour. 740-383-9944. That's a good trivia question for somebody.
It sure is, yeah.
Dorothy L'Amour.
Well, let's put that in the back room, and I'll ask that one of these.
If you want a hard question, the old Dorothy L'Amour question. But does anybody remember Dorothy L'Amour in anything else but the road pictures?
Oh, that's interesting. Now that I see her, I recognize her, but no, I don't remember from her from any other pictures.
Yeah.
Now, it looks like she played exotic women.
So. Well, there's that. But, you know, the depiction of 50s television being the depiction of life is interesting.
Yeah, and you and I were talking, and I come from that era. My mother was born in 1910. My father was born in 1908. So they grew through that, you know, the First World War, but the Depression, the Second World War. And they had those cultural training, you know, to be moms should stay at home. Moms should always wear an apron. Dads always wore a suit, that type of thing. They were in that time. And my parents were like that. But most of my friends' parents were not like that. But my dad was a minister, so ministers quite often wore suits.
Well, one of the things I remember that book says is, you know, you have the Depression in the 30s.
Yeah.
Then you have World War II in the 40s. That would not beget the 50s television version that we have in our mind because of those
shows.
It's
what we wanted to have.
I think, yeah, probably. Yeah. And it existed in some places, I'm sure.
Yeah, my mother and my father. Yeah.
But it was not the country. There were still homeless people.
Oh, there were.
There was still murder.
Yeah.
There was still bad things going on.
And there were little rats like me running around driving their dad's car when they were 14.
Well, and you have to understand also in the 50s, there still was segregation all over most of the country.
Oh,
but
absolutely.
You don't see that in Leave It to Beaver.
I think that affected my father. My father, as I've mentioned several times, was in the march from Selma to Montgomery. I think it affected my dad, that time frame, how rotten we were treating African Americans specifically. Because, like I said, he called Japanese people Japs.
Well, this is why I really feel that if you are an over-the-air free station, I don't care what, if you're paying to be on the air or you're the internet, you can do what you want. But if you're an over-the-air free station, airing Amos and Andy without any kind of disclaimer, there's a problem in that.
Are there other shows like that that you would...
I think that's the only one. I just think it was so... There are so many... If it was just one thing... It's the humor in it is based on race.
Two white guys
played the roles, and they're using a dialect that really didn't exist.
The dialect is the most offensive part.
Right. But you know what? Nobody would understand. That's the problem. If you don't put a disclaimer on that, nobody understands that.
Do you think, well, I don't know. I struggle to believe that anybody actually believes that was a reality.
People believe that Ward and June and Wally and the Beeve was everybody.
Yeah, well, I don't know. That was my life.
I say you can air it. It's America. But if you're not putting a disclaimer to let people, because I guarantee you, not even 5% of the audience knows what we just said.
Yep.
They don't know that it's two white guys, and nothing would tip you off to it. They don't know that that is a phony dialect. You wouldn't know. That maybe they think those two guys talk like that. And you would not know that some of those jokes are racist because they were racist of the 1930s.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And I think but certainly you can't dismiss them. I don't think we should ever, what do they call that now, cancel culture?
Yeah.
I don't think we should do that. But just tell people, because it was radio, and people can't see it.
Yeah. And your mind does amazing stuff. If some of these, we were talking about this, some of these things that we're talking about, if they had been on TV, it would be completely different if the same show was on radio, because you're using your little brain to make up what's really going on when you're listening to radio. But when you're watching it on TV, they lay it all out in a platter.
Well, that's it. You know, television is a director's medium, and radio is an actor's medium.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Because in television, it's all about the picture. So
yeah.
The director is controlling what you see.
Yeah.
In radio, you're taking all your brushes and your paints in every day, and we're control. I see you, but I could say you were a 500-pound, hair like Elvis, and that's what it would be.
Yeah, and there have been some terrific public service announcements done by Freeman. That take advantage of the fact that you can't see what's going on.
Well, Vin Scully, who I think is a great, great baseball announcer, one of the few still alive from that time, did both. And he said, television, he said more people were probably paying attention to him, but it's the picture.
Yeah.
You know, but he said he loved radio because he could take the time to pay attention and come up with a whole story about the guy who caught the foul ball.
Mm-hmm.
Television doesn't allow for that because you're off that picture immediately,
right,
and you're back on the game.
Well, one of the things I enjoyed, and you know that I was both a radio analyst as well as a television commentator. I've done both sides of that. I much preferred to do the radio side of a basketball or a football broadcast because you could, I usually started most of my broadcasts with what's the weather like tonight. Well, if you're watching it on TV, you probably can see what the weather is, so they don't bring it up. But it's very important. If that rain is coming down in a football game and it's icy cold and everybody's getting soaked, it's different than if you turn on a picture of it coming down.
Well, people don't like me saying this because they like music, and I like music.
Well,
I have nothing
like
against music. But radio is people, and it's the only medium that truly is people. So when radio stations, and I understand why, are music formatted, when the majority of them are music formatted, I think that's a shame in a lot of ways.
It's lazy.
Yeah, because because when you really think about it, television can paint a picture. Radio can paint a picture. It can take you anywhere in the world. A song isn't going to do that. And the thing of it is that, think about this. This is all you got to think about. When you see an interview, just like we're doing right now, if this was on television, somebody would be going, what is that shirt Scott's got on?
Yeah.
Is Glenn's hair sticking up? Where'd he get those glasses? Why are his earpieces turned that way? Where'd he get those pants? Boy, he doesn't look as good as he used to. You know, that happens on television.
Hey, why are you picking on me?
But you know what? That doesn't happen on radio. They really have to pay attention to what you're saying.
And they already think they know what you and I look like.
No. Yeah, but they're the only thing they know for sure is what we're saying.
Yeah.
Television, we're saying the same things, but they're, gaining a little weight there. Lost a...
Boy, you really are picking on me.
I mean, but is it... You do that. Haven't you done that? We all do that on television.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, Pat Sajak walks out every night and we go, toupee's a little crooked.
I didn't know he had one.
No, I'm kidding. But he's got a weird haircut.
Yeah.
See, but you wouldn't... If Pat Sajak were on radio, we'd never know he had a weird haircut.
I wouldn't know what he looked like.
Well, you know, and this is an awful thing to say, but Jeopardy's so popular... People looked at Trebek once he announced he had cancer, and every night they said, looks a little good, looks a little bad.
Yeah.
You wouldn't do that on radio.
No. And I love radio because of that, because it allows your brain to make up your own little world for those people.
Yeah.
Now, Scott is not very handsome, but
well,
I am
not.
Extremely handsome.
That's right. You lay that out. Well, heavens knows all beautiful people are on radio.
That's right.
That's right. You know, though, I never understood that saying, and I never really found it true either, that, you know, you have a face for radio. I get it's a joke.
Yeah.
But that's really not true.
Well, you might have a voice for radio, but you definitely don't have a face for radio. It doesn't make any difference what you look like.
Right. I mean, I've known many, many good-looking people who were on radio.
I'm trying to think of the people that I know on radio that weren't good-looking. Most
right.
of the people were...
And honestly,
pleasing.
A lot of the funny-looking people made it on television because they were
funny-looking.
Right, and you can see it.
Yeah.
You know, William Frawley on I Love Lucy.
Yeah.
He wasn't exactly a matinee idol.
No, he absolutely was not. He had a good voice. He would have been good on radio.
He would have done well both.
Yeah, he would have.
But so the question is, should Amos and Andy be aired on public radio? And by public, I'm saying over-the-air free radio without a disclaimer. 740-383-9944. And are there any other shows that would be that way?
Yeah, I was struggling to think of any other shows that may have been that offensive.
Well, like I said in hour one, people will say that about Jack Benny, but it's hard to say it because Rochester was played by an African-American actor, and he was the smartest person in the room. He ran the family.
What was the movie about where they were in a... It was a comedy, and they were in... It was a television show, and they were in a... German prison camp. What was the name of that? I often felt that was kind of offensive. If I have German heritage, but there would be people that have come from Germany that might find that very offensive, the way Sergeant, what was his name? I can't remember. Anyway, they really made the German people out to be really ignorant because the guy who was in charge, the American who was a prisoner of war, was way smarter than Sergeant whatever his name.
But you know what the thing is about... See, this is where... See, I'll go the other way now.
Okay.
The problem is, I think this is where we get way too borderline PC because that's the... If we have to... Amos and Andy, I think, is just a slam dunk, clear, for so many reasons, inappropriate show. If we have to really dig. I think it's okay to make a German stupid. I think it's okay to make an American stupid. I think it's okay to make fun of people. I think that's a lot of our... I mean, what is the definition of comedy? If it happens to you, it's comedy. If it happens to me, it's a tragedy.
Huh.
Think about it, though. If you fall down, I'll laugh. If I fall down, it ain't so funny.
That's right. And a lot of people, after the fact, realize they laughed when something
inappropriately.
Was hurt. Yeah, absolutely.
But it's spontaneous, and you can't do anything about
it. That's right.
It.
You've done it.
All right. Right. So that, you know, because if we end up taking all of the dumb characters, and we end up taking all of the butlers who are the smartest people in the room, and we end up taking all of the this out, we're going to be left with not much.
It's Hogan's Heroes.
Hogan's Heroes.
Was the show I was trying to remember. They really made Germans seem like they were really stupid.
Did I ever tell you one of the worst faux pas I ever made in an interview?
No, tell us about it.
I was interviewing Larry Storch.
Are you going to get embarrassed now?
Oh, this is just funny to me. I was interviewing Larry Storch.
Give me a...
Well, this is the purpose. Okay. People who know, Larry Storch was a famous actor. And he did a lot of things. He did voices. He was in a lot of sitcoms. And I get to the point in the interview, and I say, what was it like to work with Werner Klimperer, Colonel Klink? And he's saying, boy, I don't remember working with him. And I said, well, and I, Larry Storch was old at that point. And I, well, maybe he just having memory trouble. So I let that go.
And it wasn't him, it was you, huh?
Well, I went off the air that day, and somebody came up to me and said, Colonel Klink was on Hogan's Heroes. Larry Storch was on F Troop.
Oh, yeah, and F Troop was also kind of annoying.
But it was, so there you go. If you listen to my Larry Storch interview, you'll hear me ask him about Werner Klimperer, Colonel Klink.
Did you ever get back to him and say,
no, I never. I thought, well, that's...
You know, I've done a lot of interviews and made a lot of mistakes, and I've done them here, and you've not corrected me, which was nice,
right,
until after the fact.
Yeah.
But it is, I wake up at the middle of the night and go, oh my gosh, I said that.
Well, there's just, you know, what that is, and I'm not trying to defend myself here, but I never watched either one of those shows, and to me, they are very similar.
Yeah, I think so. I never watched them very much either because I thought they were boring, but...
Well, I mean, I think they had their funny moments.
They were, yeah, they did have funny moments, but they were way overplayed, I thought. Yeah, I did like Sergeant Schultz and his accent was way overdone, and his character was way beyond. And we now know that there were lots of Sergeant Schultzes that shot people in the ground and buried them.
Yeah, but
right,
you know, I'm thinking about Hogan's Heroes.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think at that time, to be honest with you, making Germans stupid was probably a good thing because this is post-World War II.
Yeah, I think a lot of people liked it.
I'm okay with that.
Well, I wasn't okay with it, but
I'm okay.
I think a lot of people liked
it.
Well,
because I think, you know, that's a bad time. And I think sometimes... you have to take the most horrific things, and even if you're taking an incoming, you have to make fun of them. You just have to. If you don't laugh about it, it will kill you, the despair. I mean, how many jokes were made about Osama bin Laden after 9/11? You know, it...
A lot.
A lot. Is that wrong? Is that saying, well, you're making fun of all Arab people? I don't think it is.
Yeah, and is it fair that you're making fun of somebody that got killed?
Right. No, I think that's the right thing to do.
Well,
you're taking a horrific event, and you're trying to make
it
lighter.
Yeah, I guess. I try not to do that sort of thing. I was watching a gentleman on 60 Minutes last night. He's 102 years old now, but he was the lawyer that at the Nuremberg trials that actually... convicted several people who were not at Auschwitz. They were the people that went out and...
Ben Friends.
Was that his name?
I've interviewed him.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Ben was very, very interesting in that he said these people were not bad people when they were Germans. They did bad, horrible things, but they were good people. They were moms and dads, and they were had their good way about them, but they just... they were following orders and really did do what they were told to do because they were afraid that they were going
to
get
And we out. Better get to that point in this country soon.
I hope so, yeah.
Because we are very stuck on, and I'm going to call the Nazi movement, I mean, there was political nature to it. I mean, it was a Nazi party.
Yeah.
And Hitler was elected by popular vote.
Right.
So, not that anything in this country has been like Hitler, but we need to stop. You know what? And I've said it, and I'm going to say it again.
Are you going to become a lib on me?
No. I'm going to become the most sane-minded person in the room, and okay. A lot of people don't like it. Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton are people's grandmothers.
Yes, they are.
Can you believe that?
Great-grandmothers, probably.
And guess what? Donald Trump is somebody's grandfather.
Yeah, yeah.
Think about your own grandfather and grandmother.
And there are people that love them.
They
do. No matter what side you're on.
So we need to get away from this thing, like Ben Ferenz was talking about. They are, it's hard to say for people, you know, but there was an episode of a sitcom years ago, a sitcom of all things, where the girl finds out that her grandfather had been a member of the Ku Klux Klan, and so she doesn't want anything named after him. Now, she loved him. He took care of her when she was sick. It's her grandfather. He's dead. So, this is awful. She finds out about this, and it changes her whole opinion. And the woman in the show, who's like the mother figure, walks up and she says, what he did was not right, but he was your grandfather, and it's okay that you loved him.
Mm-hmm.
I wish we could get there.
Yeah, and it's tough to get there. My father once was being a minister, but he was at my grandmother and grandfather's house having dinner with his sport coat on, because you never went to their house for dinner without having his sport coat on. But anyway, Dad was sitting there criticizing the KKK, who had come that day to his church and dumped money on the altar, and he threw it back in their face, and it was kind of kind of a big thing in Indianapolis. But Dad was talking about it, and I'm not sure whether Grandpa or Grandma said to him, would you go out and get something out of Uncle, and I can't remember which one of his uncles, it was my great uncle, go and get it out of his car. And Dad said, why? And just go get it. And so he went outside, and there on the back is hanging up the robes of the Grand Exalted Cyclops, I think, or something like that from the KKK. We all have bad stuff like that in our families, and it doesn't mean you should condone what they do, but you're going to love them if they're, you know, somebody in your family.
Well, here's the problem. Okay, let's say you walk in your Ku Klux Klan robe and you dump the money on the altar. Okay, get out, I don't want it, so on and so forth. How many people sat in there in suits on Sunday who were members and dumped it in the pot?
Well, and my dad has been thrown out of two churches, I believe, and in both cases, I think it was because of his liberal bent that way.
But at some point, we got to figure, you know, it's okay to fight, though. The Ku Klux Klan is not right by any means, but we better start understanding that sometimes it's not in your face. I had somebody tell me one time, I believe an African-American person, they don't worry about the Ku Klux Klan and the robes. They know what they are.
Yeah,
it's the ones who are sitting in City Hall and the ones who are judges who you need to worry about.
Yeah, because you'll never know it until you get
smacked
in the head.
You'll never know it until you're exactly right. And I think that's very smart advice that people should take.
You know, I was really lucky being brought up as a minister's kid. My mother was an angel. And, well, we all think that, I think, or many of us do. But she always taught me, don't judge anybody else. Just do what you have to do, because you never know what happened to them just before they walked into the room. And she was very insistent on that, that we not judge other people around us. And I think we've got to find a way to do that. We're missing out on, when you love somebody else, or when you even like somebody else, and you do something good for somebody else, it makes you feel so good. And why can't we do that? Why can't an old white guy like me do that for a young African-American boy who's got his pants too low and his hat turned backwards? And, you know, we should do that. We should do that.
But in America, we've lost the ability to work in the system. We work, we stand on this principle outside the system, then we never get in the system to fix the system. And I'm not saying lie. If somebody asks you directly about your feeling on something, say it. But if you know that it's going to hurt you, and you know that you are not going to get in the position by saying it, why are you doing it? And also,
measure that.
Yeah. I mean, let's be sensible here. Oh, good. You're standing on your morals. Good. You're standing in your kitchen. You know, and the guy who beat you, by the way, who feels exactly the opposite way, is now voting.
Yeah.
And we better start to get that. Yeah. Because if we don't, more and more people who feel certain ways about things are going to keep going away.
There are always going to be bad things that happen to people that you're kind of opposing. But taking advantage of that and doing the nya-nya-nya-nya stuff to them is not helping anybody. My former opponent for state representative, she's still in office. She accepted money from Larry Householder twice, several tens, probably $20,000, $30,000 worth of money from him. But me standing around going, nya-nya-nya-nya, I told you she was bad. She's not bad. She's doing it the way she thinks is the right way to do it.
Well, and this is the thing I don't understand. Where did everybody get so entrenched in their ideas?
I have no idea. And my wife and I ask each other that every day. Why are we like that now?
But you know what? I'll never be a politician because that just doesn't interest me. And that it's just too much. But if somebody asked me about these big questions that you always get asked now, gun control. Honestly, my answer would be, I don't know. For two reasons. Number one, I don't know what bills are going to come before me. There's not going to be a bill that says, do you want to ban all guns? That ain't coming.
No.
There's not black and white here.
Right.
And number two, I really don't know. I don't know what the answer is. So why would I stand up there and go, I am anti-gun, or I am pro-gun? You're done. You're done in this area if you get up there and say, I'm anti-gun.
There is no absolute answer to anything. Truly, none.
Right. So why do so many people get up and do that today?
It's political.
Dumb.
They think certain people will love you if you're anti-gun, and certain people will love you if you're pro-gun. When I was running for office, I made it very clear that I was not for allowing people to use weapons of mass destruction or even weapons of war like M16s and things like that. But I had nothing against going out and hunting. I had nothing against target shooting.
But see, nobody hears the second part.
No, yeah, well, I kept saying it.
Yeah.
But I don't think they did hear
it. And that's why I think on those questions, it's best to say, because that really is an I don't know. I don't know.
I did know. I was absolutely convinced I was right, and I still am. So.
Right, but do you think that you could get elected in any way for that position saying that?
I'm not so certain that I went into running for that position to get elected. I was there so that I'd have a podium to say what I believe.
But then you will never have a chance to vote on it.
No, you're right.
Right.
Well, unless you happen to hit the right spot and people vote you in. Yeah. I mean, and that's what I was hoping for, but I knew that was very slim chance.
Which I think there's the quandary. If you can't, if you don't think you're going to win, and you can't win because of certain things you say, then, I mean, we can say them, but we can say them as a private citizen, too.
Well, I'm hoping that there's somebody out there that heard my speech about why I am not for abortion, but I'm not for telling people they can't have it. And I did that speech more than once. I hope there are people out there that maybe understand the other side of the question just a little bit better. And they didn't vote for me. That's okay.
Well, I just want to play where this started this morning. It started because on Facebook, and I do think this is interesting, I had written a post this morning, and here was the post. I put, "You can never go wrong starting the day with a ham and cheese omelet and a large diet from the nicest person in the world. I think this might have been what Ben Franklin ate during the Constitutional Convention. I wonder if Betsy Ross made them for him." Now, somebody thought this was sexist.
See, I don't see any sexistness in
there. Well, I know what they're doing because it's Betsy Ross, yeah. And oh, the woman had to make the omelet. But the person who brought me breakfast was a woman. Who are you supposed to compare her to? We're 3 days from July 4th.
Well, I knew it wasn't me, even though I am the nicest person in the world.
No, but this is how far we've gone.
Yeah, we're pushing it way too far.
I mean, we gotta get, come on.
Things aren't black and white. Things aren't absolutes. You have to give a little. You have to say, attaboy.
Right. Well, I'm not going to get in Facebook arguments, but my response to this, if this person happens, and I like this person, my response simply is, would it have been better to put George Washington's name in there and then have no historic woman mentioned in that? Would that be better? Would that be non-sexist?
Well, you were doing a visual story about, I mean,
it was a simile. I took a whole situation and just backed it up 250 years. That was it.
Did you think you were being funny?
Funny.
I mean, did you...
Not like ha-ha funny. Just people who understand who Ben Franklin and Betsy Ross are might go,
Yeah, well, I would, you know, I find that if you're going to say something that might not be politically correct, always judge what your motivation for saying it is. And if you're doing it to get a laugh, a cheap laugh, maybe that's not a good thing. But if you're doing it because that's the way you believe, then okay. And you kind of...
Well, I don't know if I... maybe Betsy Ross did make an omelet. I don't know.
So.
I'm sure she might have.
You weren't worried about saying she made an omelet.
Well, I never would have dreamed that was politically incorrect.
That's
the first problem of the whole thing. What's coming up with you and Dr. Feynman in 30 minutes? Also, by the way, Offbeat News and Trivia, Nate Redmond at 4, and Trinity Baptist at 6 today, and Progressive Life next.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about... there have been a lot of really crazy things that are going on in politics. And if I started to read all the ones that I'm going to talk about, we'd be here way past when we're supposed to be starting for the next show.
Well, you know, I'm trying to think of anything crazy that I can think of as of late, but I do know that we didn't mention Vax-a-Million, it's all over, but you know, we're still under 50%.
And I'm going to have to say, I bow to you. I think you were right on this one.
Five weeks later.
Yeah, and I don't think you're right on everything, so...
Happy 4th.
Yeah, happy 4th.
Stay tuned. I'm heading for the dugout, but Glenn will be up in 15 minutes.
X of Life, Charlotte Ray, Mrs. Garrett.
How much of Mrs. Garrett is in Charlotte Ray?
I'm not, you know, they made Mrs. Garrett perfect, which was ridiculous, as I wrote in the book. I mean, they never let me yell at the kids or anything, which most parents, you know, all the kids wanted a mother like Mrs. Garrett. Well, she wasn't real, because most mothers lose their temper sometime and they get mad, and so on and so forth. Anyway.
To the voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid, legendary actress Pat Carroll.
And I think villains are the most fascinating people as an actress to play. They have more edges to them. They have more color to them. Isn't that a shame that goodness isn't more fascinating, or our world would be better?
I guess...
But there is something fascinated about tacky people. mean people. They're colorful. Good people always seem to be a little bit, ugh, yucky. But bad people always have edges to them. That's why they're so wonderful to play for actors.
That?
Because you can pick all the things in life as a human being that annoy you or that you would like to do to be really rotten mean. Most people are too afraid to be rotten mean because we want people's approval so badly. And we know that being rotten mean isn't going to get